The WLEW News and Public Affairs Department now presents What Do You Think? Here is your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. We have a guest on the phone today. It is Josh Rivard. We're going to be talking about him. He's coming up to the area. He's going to be at the Huron County Suicide Prevention Coalition's 7th Annual Walk for Awareness as their guest speaker. So we're going to be talking about what he's going to be talking about and how he got into this. And I'm assuming it's not a happy story. So welcome to the show, Josh.
Thank you for having me.
I guess the first thing I'd say is condolences. I kind of read your biography, and I'm sorry for how you got into this.
Yeah, I appreciate the condolences. Yeah, it's unfortunate. My brother passed away by suicide in 2011, and, you know, at that time I was 18 years old, first year in college, trying to figure some things out. So that was a big emotional impact for me. And since then, I've kind of been going on this crusade of talking about mental health and being more and more involved in the mental health community and really getting people on the outside of the community to engage with mental health and understand it. So it's been an interesting journey since then.
Do you find that people generally kind of shy away from the topic? They're a bit uncomfortable with it?
People are definitely uncomfortable with it, but I notice that they're not shy about it. More than anything is people are scared that they don't have the right words or knowledge to actively talk about it. So, you know, most Americans, like 1 in 4, will suffer from depression, anxiety, or kind of these general mental health issues that a lot of us have. So people are aware of it. People know family members with it. I have depression, PTSD, anxiety myself, and people are really interested in talking about it, but they're super nervous about asking the wrong questions more than anything.
And does that travel on to asking the wrong questions about someone they may feel is leaning that way?
Yes. So more often than not, because they're afraid of asking, you know, a very close friend or a family member, they kind of do tend to just listen and not really engage the conversation as much, whereas the person probably wants more than anything is, you know, somebody to talk with. Openly, candidly, and because this is a true fact, is that sometimes people say the wrong thing and that can have a consequence. So people like to err on the side of caution than going for it.
But there is kind of a truism to the fact that sometimes when you get someone to say something out loud, it starts to put things back into perspective. It isn't this humongous thing that they've been building up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's something I've helped actually train my parents and my friends about, too, is that, like, when I'm going through my bouts of depression, I actually just recently, not too long ago, came out of one, and it was, you know, basically for a few weeks, I was just kind of really working hard to try to get myself out of bed. I've trained my parents well enough to say, like, okay, like, let me speak, ask appropriate questions, but do not be afraid. Like, people want to try to treat you as very delicate and, you know, very fragile in those moments. And it's like, no, I'm still the same person. There's just kind of this neurotransmitter imbalance that's happening in my head. I just want to talk it out, get these runaway thoughts out of my brain and try to talk it out. And then once you, yeah, like you said, once you get it out to reality, you realize, okay, things aren't completely spinning out of control. I'm okay.
Are there triggers that you can see coming, like the anniversary of the birthday or holidays without your loved ones, or do they just sneak up on you?
Both. So for me, it's actually my brother passed away January 28th. That doesn't affect me at all. Either does his birthday, which was April 2nd. Those are just other days to me. But days like the holidays are especially rough because him and I were kind of troublemakers when it came to photos. So not having my partner in crime for my mom to yell at when we take a goofy photo when she wants a dead serious one is really hard. I actually also have a hard time because he lived in Grand Rapids near the end of his life, and I have a hard time going to Grand Rapids sometimes. So you kind of have an idea of when it's coming and going. But sometimes, too, is you just get hit suddenly with, like, oh, no, I'm in the middle of a depression. It's kind of hard to catch the beginning stages of it But that's kind of one of the things I talk about, actually, is helping people to, I call it forecasting. Like basically your mental climate and weather inside your head and saying, okay, what's going on? How is this happening? And that's actually been, I found at least people have been talking to me and the other groups I've talked to and done my speech at, they've said that that's actually really helped them kind of conceptualize what's going on in their head and kind of saying, okay, and giving them a little bit more agency in how to deal with it.
Is it important to find the way to deal with it? Some people would just, you know, I'll just work hard and I'll, you know, and then I'll be too tired at night to think about it. But it does come back when you've got free time, right?
Yeah. And that's why I always kind of say is if I constantly keep forecasting on it, pushing yourself to go and work on it, there's nothing wrong with that, and trying to, like, you know, exhaust yourself throughout the day, because you really don't want these to affect your life in a negative way. You don't want these mental health issues to kind of control everything you do. But again, also at the same time, if you're not addressing it and not actively working to improve the situation through meditation, I'm a big fan of just going outside on hikes alone. I really enjoy that, and that really helps me. If you're not actively trying to fix the problem, it will still remain a problem, no matter how tired you get, no matter how hard you work through it. It's, you know, you'd rather, if you have a car that has a mechanical issue, you'd rather take care of it sooner rather than later, because if you take care of it later, that can exacerbate other problems.
Is it important, if you're going through this, to seek professional help, not to try and do it on your own? Because there are a couple of different avenues, and sometimes they use more than one, whether it's just counseling or if there needs to be, you know, therapy, medications and such. Is it important to address that so you've got yourself a better chance to succeed?
Oh, yeah. You know, obviously we have a bit of a health insurance out in the United States. I myself am losing it but at the end of December. But if you have the ability to go to a therapist, to go to a counselor, to go to a psychiatrist or a psychologist, do it. People tend to have this very negative reaction to going to therapy as if they're somehow broken. And it's like, no. Humans have weird brains. We're animals that created society, and we don't know quite how to handle it. So seeking professional help is absolutely one of the number one ways I say to go to. I myself see a therapist every other week. I have a psychiatrist. We're on a discussion right now about medication for myself as well. And there's no shame in taking medication, I think. I mean, you try to keep life as complicated and hard, and you need tools to help you, and medication is a very valuable tool. And going to a therapist is also a very valuable tool. And going to seek professional help also gives you the tools that way when you're at home and these problems arise, you can better deal with it. So that way you don't become a danger to yourself, or, you know, making rash decisions, or some people with diseases, mental health issues like bipolar disorder, you know, when you are hitting on this big mania emotional state, you don't want to be doing crazy ideas like packing up and moving out to Canada or something like that. It kind of helps to give you this conceptualization of what's going on in your head and saying, okay, like, this is not part of my personality. This is something in my mood that has changed in the short term and is causing this.
And it's important to have a support around you when you do need it.
Yep, absolutely. It's whether that's friends, family, animals, service animals, you know, kind of choose who is the healthiest option for you. My parents helped me a lot, but my closest, my biggest support group is my group of friends from college. You know, my parents, they do what they can. They love it. But my personality tends to kind of latch towards people of my age and my shared experiences with me, where I can be open and honest, and they can reflect back and say, you know, ask intelligent questions, and they're well trained. I did a good job training them, I think.
Well, I assume part of that is as well is that your parents are also going through their own grief and problems with the situation. So there's often a walking absolutely on eggshells on everybody's part.
Yeah, absolutely. And for a few years it was like that, and until my bike trip. Where I biked across the country and I talked to, you know, random strangers about this. And I came back home and had a real hard, difficult sit-down conversation with my parents did we kind of flesh out, okay, like, you know, sometimes you get in your own head, and yeah, I'm struggling missing my brother and one of my closest friends, but my parents also lost a son. So we had to have kind of, you know, come home discussion about it and really figure out where we all stood. And it was really healthy. It was very difficult, but at the end of the day, it was worth it to have that conversation because it was healthy, and we've had a better relationship going forward from it.
Is it difficult because you'll get people who will be just, you know, oh, you know, time heals all wounds. Well, maybe you need more than time. Maybe you need the help.
Yeah, absolutely. I think time heals all wounds is kind of a false, I don't want to say dichotomy, but it's like a false idea that you just kind of sit around and things will get better. And like I said earlier, no. Go see professional help. Get help from your friends who will give you the, you know, healthy healing you need. If I get a big cut in my arm from work, I do construction currently. If I get a big cut in my arm, I'm not just going to let it sit around and let it heal. You know, you bandage it up, go home, you clean the wound, you take care of it. And it's kind of the same with your brain. You got to take care of it.
Well, if you ignore it, it'll get infected and be even worse.
Yeah, absolutely. And I went through a lot of struggles and when I was out in graduate school in Colorado, you know, you're away from family. It was the first time. I had never really moved out of state. I had been to other states and lived and worked there temporarily, but I spent 2 years in Colorado, and that was really rough. And the stress of graduate school and, you know, making $15,000 a year and trying to live on that, it's very stressful, and I wasn't taking care of it. And by the time I finally did, you know, instead of being, you know, a bunch of minor problems that I could have fixed, it had basically coalesced into this monstrous problem that made me realize, like, I can't fix this out here. I have to quit and go home.
Is another trap trying to self-medicate yourself through either alcohol or other substances?
Absolutely. 1,000%. You know, if you're drinking or smoking marijuana or using drugs to make yourself feel normal, that's a huge sign that something's wrong. Marijuana is legal out in Colorado, and I was partaking in it, and then I started doing it way too much, and it was helping me get through work, but that's a problem. I didn't recognize it when it was right in front of me. So people tend to, you know, when depression hits, and, you know, the saying is, you know, when the economy is good, people drink. When the economy is bad, people drink more. Well, it's kind of the same. When you're having a good time, you drink, you have fun. But when you're not feeling good, you drink a lot more. And if you're not careful with it, it's a massive problem. It becomes kind of this escape from reality and attempt to feel like a normal human being. You should feel like a normal human being without these substances. You know, medication is a different story because that's prescribed by psychiatrists and heavily regulated and heavily looked at. But if you're going out to the store and, you know, having a beer a night, casual, it's fine. Drinking to get drunk because you're running away from something, that's a major red flag.
You basically just get a second problem.
Exactly. You're not healing anything. You're not solving anything. You're just kind of ignoring it. And then, two, you're wasting money, and you're also doing real physical damage to your body on top of it as well.
Do people going through this, you know, is part of the problem learning to say, you know, to drop any guilt you think you might have that I should have seen something, and hindsight is 20/20 and better, and you, oh, signs, there were signs, but they weren't really signs because a lot of people have the same things going on and it's not happening that way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's people dump it on themselves when it's not really their fault.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's something I struggled with for a long time pretty hard, and on some days I still struggle with, because you tell yourself exactly that. I should have seen these signs coming. No, you have your own life. They have their own life. And sometimes they don't give you any signs to read. So to say that is just kind of putting way too much pressure on yourself. We have our own lives. And that's why I always personally, when I ask my friends or strangers and I talk to you, I'm comfortable enough, I'll ask them, like, hey, how you doing? You know, we're Americans. We tend to say good, regardless of what's happening. I say, well, how's your mental health? Are you keeping an eye on it? You know, I usually say in a very colloquial way, how's your brain bucket? I work construction, so it's a little bit more casually how we talk. But, yeah, people don't want to give you the signs. People feel guilty making you worry about their problems, so they try to hide it within themselves. And even if they're showing signs, sometimes they're so subtle that you just don't pick up on them, and that's okay. You know, if you're not a trained psychiatrist, you're not a trained therapist, you're that person's friend. And if they want to hide something from you, they will. If they want to show you something, they will. You kind of have to be a little more proactive about it. And if you're really worried about somebody, have that hard, difficult conversation and be like, are you okay? And let them know that you come from a place of appreciation and love and not, you know, you are also concerned, but you don't want that person to feel as if, you know, you're going to turn them into a mental hospital or anything like that. You just want to make sure they're doing okay. And more than anything, helping them guide along on this, you know, they're going to go on this trip, this mental health journey, and try to figure out what's going on with themselves. You are to be there not as a guide, but kind of as support, to kind of like help them go through it and keep them along the path and say, you know, everything's okay. And that's one of the hardest things too, is just trying to fight that stigma of reaching out for help ultimately and teaching people how to forecast and understand things. And I think the lesson I teach to people with forecasting, I think can also be applied to how to do everything.
Do you find it difficult if people, because of your position and your speaking, come up to you and ask you, you know, what are the signs? Because the signs are infinite, and it's not like diabetes where, you know, well, you know, you have these symptoms and they're classic textbooks. This is something that is personalized with each individual.
I actually, the way I conceptualize it, I don't want to say it's easy, but I think I have a good general rule of thumb, which is using your five senses. You know, taste, touch, smell. What is it? Taste, touch, smell, sight, and
hearing.
I always forget one.
Hearing,
thank you, yeah. So, you know, so for taste, like appetite. I know when I'm going through depression is when my appetite changes, and that's a physiological thing as well. Your brain and your gut are super heavily connected. So, you know, saying proactive eating healthy can actually help mitigate a lot of mental health issues and help the healing process. But when I'm not eating big, because I like to be very active, I bike a lot, and I do rock climbing and all these, you know, working construction is very labor intensive. I eat a lot. I eat about 3,000 calories a day at minimum. But I notice when my plate sizes shrink or that I'm not hungry often. And I kind of keep an eye on my weight for that reason too. Sound. There's certain types of music that I really like, but when I'm, you know, if you're going through a problem, your pace changes a little bit. You might start listening to slower songs or heavier, more metal songs, you know, songs that kind of elicit more of an emotional reaction out of you, as opposed to songs that you just enjoy because you like the beat or the artist. Touch, sometimes people become touch averse when they're going through a situation. You know, people usually love hugging or, you know, giving high fives to you. You kind of just want to be alone and don't want to touch anybody. Sight, I always say, is staying out of sight. If you are having problems and you kind of feel as if you don't want the world to look at you, you try to hide. You know, I'm a very bombastic and loud person. When I'm going through my depression, I quiet right down and I don't want to be noticed. And that's something I helps me understand things. Smell is really associated with taste as well. You know, I love spaghetti and beef and, you know, all these good old American foods. But if I start smelling it and it starts eliciting a negative reaction, that's a flag. And some things too, sometimes you're just sick. Sometimes, you know, you have the flu or the cold. So you kind of have to ask yourself about the five senses constantly and, you know, make sure that you're asking the questions if they're appropriate and you're saying to yourself, like, okay, like, I'm not eating as much. What's happening? And you start looking, okay, well, I'm also kind of like my significant other. I kind of want to feel a little bit more distance from them. and I really don't want to go out in public that much. Okay, well, that's 3 out of 5 right there. Something might be up. And the thing is, too, is I don't want to give anybody any hard and fast rules because we are all completely different. But I really do think that using your 5 senses and kind of comparing them to a baseline you like versus what you're feeling now can really help you understand, like, okay, what is the current stock of my mental health situation?
Well, it sounds like it's really about knowing yourself, and a lot of times you're helped to do that with professional help to recognize these things. If you're seeing you're not eating, you know, well, all right, I should eat stuff that's, you know, not going to be heavy and drag me down, but to try and turn it around.
Yeah.
And if you're not seeing people, then maybe you need to just, you know, go out and do something. And even if you're not actively involved with people, be around them and just start moving in the other direction.
Yeah, like even if you don't want to go out in public, like inviting a close friend over who you enjoy and telling them, I don't really want to hang out. I want you to come over, but I just kind of want to do nothing. That's great. And for somebody, if they reach out to you and they want that help, I suggest to people always, the number one thing I would always do is clean. Clean the area that they live in, because that's kind of one of the first things to go is, oops, sorry about that. One of the first things to go is kind of like you just lose track of how clean your room is. It gets dirty, clustered, because you're just so in your own head, you kind of forget about it. You know, open the blinds, turn on the lights. If you're helping a friend, do all this, clean up a little bit. You know, clean the dishes, spray some nice fragrances in the room, vacuum. You know, that's a good way to reach out. Because you don't necessarily, because I know one of the biggest problems with depression, especially as I have it, is wanting to get out of bed. You want to get out of bed. Your brain is screaming to get out of bed, but there's a just complete and utter disconnect between doing it and thinking it. And it just somehow, it's just not firing in that way. But to have somebody there to be like, okay, well, you know, stay in bed. You know, fine, I'll help you out. We're good friends. You know, even just turning on some television or something for them to just basically kind of distract them just a little bit. You know, being careful as to what you show. Try to air more on something that they enjoy that is positive. Personally, I always turn on Parks and Recreation. Ron Swanson gives me fuel as a worker. So it's kind of, you know, knowing yourself, knowing your friends, and just offering little bits of help can go a lot farther than trying to completely fix the situation. Because we're not professionals. That's not our goal. Our goal is to help our friends get to the professional to get it done.
But your friends are there a lot longer and a lot more often than a professional can be.
Yes. Yes. So they're kind of, you know, the stopgap, I guess, in between, you know, therapies and until you get onto medication or things along those lines. So utilizing them as a resource, which is, like, they are a resource. They want to be there to be used. Understanding it in that, I think, helps, because a lot of people always feel as if they're a burden. And you're not a burden. Your friends do love you. Your family does love you. It's your brain that's tricking you into thinking the opposite.
Okay. You are going to be the guest speaker for the Huron County Suicide Prevention Coalition's Walk for Awareness. What type of program are you going to be presenting? Is it going to be just a prepared statement? Are you going to be doing questions and answers, a little bit of both? How does that work?
A little bit of both. So I give a speech for this particular talk. It's a half hour. Usually I do an hour, but I condense it down. I talk about this bike trip I went on. It was my brother's goal to bike across the country with me. And after he passed away, I kind of just, in between the stresses of grad school, I started planning out this trip for 2 years. And I went on it from Key West to Seattle. And along the way, I talked to people about mental health and asked a lot of questions and did some speaking and got to see the country and learn how nature helps us. And so I usually talk about that trip and how that trip helped me conceptualize mental health and what I learned along the way. Because it's a lot more interesting. Talking about mental health is kind of uncomfortable, but when I put into the context of my bike trip, it's a lot of a different grab. It's a lot more entertaining. I also have some good anecdotes from it and some funny stories. And then I always ask people to ask me questions. I love answering questions. Even if I don't know the answer, I love saying, I don't know. Like, let's go on this journey and figure it out ourselves. So I bring my bike with me. I bring all my gear with me, and I kind of talk about it, you know, And I talk about things, too, in a very tactile sense. So one section I call staying dry. It's the idea that we shouldn't be going in life chasing happiness consistently, because happiness is like sadness. It comes and goes. We should be focusing on being content. And you can be content when depressed. You can be content when happy. You can be content, you know, when angry, stuff like that. Really taking the situation. So I bring out my rain gear, and I bring out the, and then the other gear I wore, and kind of say, okay, if you really look at these materials, they're meant to keep me dry, yes, but the realities of life is I'm going to get wet regardless. If I'm outside for a long enough time, you know, you're going to get wet. That's just how it works. So rather than focused on staying absolutely 100% dry, or in this case happy, instead focus on being content, you know. And that means using materials that won't suck the heat away from you when they're wet, or materials that won't, you know, cause real bad abrasions from chafing. And it helps me conceptualize to people, because I realize when they have something tactile to attach an idea to, the lesson goes a little bit further than if I just went up there, talked, and they said, you know, who's this guy? He's some 26-year-old. It's like, well, no, I've got a little more experience. Here's some ideas. And more than anything, too, is I don't give people, like I said, hard, fast answers. I give them, here are some tools you can use, and here are some analytical devices to help you understand what's going on. And by attaching that to my gear, which a lot of Michiganders are super outdoorsy, so they have a lot of the similar gear, it really helps them out.
Okay, and you go around the country doing this?
I wish.
Oh, you wish.
Apparently, I wish, yeah. I'm speaking in Michigan right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so if I could go around the country, I absolutely would love to, because seeing the country by bike was really beautiful. And on my trip, I did speak briefly at a few different places, one in Florida, one in Texas. But for the most part, I was listening and gathering data, information, and trying to learn as much as I could.
You made a comment a while back, and it kind of hit me when you said it. You know, there's going to be, you're going to be happy and you're going to be sad. And that's normal, because that's the only way we know happiness from being sad. It's when it reaches an extreme that's dangerous that you need to be aware of it and get the help you need.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes too, even depression is not necessarily sadness. For me, my depression is not sadness. It's complete apathy to everything.
Oh, lethargy. Yeah.
Yeah, just devoid of any emotion. You kind of feel like a robot. Some people with depression do feel extremely sad to the point that they're, you know, crying. And that's fine. That's your brain's, that's what happens when your brain's neurotransmitters react. That's your physical way of expressing it. So yeah, just kind of like really learning. And that's why I kind of say, like, if you know the difference between climate and weather, like climate is long-term weather patterns, you know, over a large area, but weather is the short-term. Know your personality versus your mood. Your mood is short. It's going to change. You know, in one day, you can go through the whole range of emotions and back. But if you really know yourself, you can say either, is this normal? Is this too extreme? Is this extreme? Is there something even missing? Like, I know us Michiganders, when it's, you know, fall and we don't get rain for a very long period of time, that's an anomaly. That's weird. We pay attention to that. Same thing for your brain. If you go through a long period of not really feeling anything, or a long period of extreme sadness, or a long period of extreme frustration or anger, that's a red flag. Pay attention to that. Keep an eye on it. Seek help for that.
It is the first part of getting help, recognizing it. Because people can tell you you've got a problem and you should address it, but until you recognize it and do something about it, nothing's going to change?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, too, I think it's easier to recognize it in yourself than to go and ask for help. So the first step is actually, it's not easy. It's very difficult to kind of really take a good, long, hard look in the mirror and say, something's wrong. But you need to do that. And that's why kind of always taking stock of the situation helps, I think. You know, I wake up just about every day and run through the five senses and say, okay, how am I feeling? Things are going okay. Things are fine. I'm content. Perfect. I got this. But if you wake up one day, ask yourself the five basic senses, and something is wrong, then you need to start digging a little bit deeper and recognizing when things are wrong. How do you recognize things are wrong? That's a very personal. That's a very personal thing. Some people are more expressive, and their friends can kind of help them point it out. I'm hard-headed, so when somebody tells me something is wrong, particularly like if I'm doing something that seems different than my usual personality, and something might be up, I kind of double down and say, "No, everything's fine." Well, I look at that. I got to look at that reaction and say, "Okay, I'm hard-headed. I'm a bit of a contrarian sometimes. Okay, there actually is something wrong." You have to really. And the best thing about being honest with yourself is, if you're honest with yourself, is that there's no external people at play. There's nobody to judge you from the outside. You have to be honest with yourself, though, and kind of look in the mirror and say, you know, the literal mirror or the mental mirror in your head, and just kind of say, okay, something's up. And there's nothing wrong with saying there is something wrong and then doing the next step of, I should go to therapy. And I can't stress enough how helpful, at the least, therapy is. A lot of college kids, if you're listening, you have resources on campus. Go to them. I didn't use my counseling center until my senior year of my undergrad, and I really regret it. Even for minor problems of like, oh, exam week is very stressful, go to therapy. They'll help you out.
And is this especially problemsome when it happens to someone and they have kids? And, you know, you can you use that to tell yourself, I've got to get help because I have to do it not only for me but for them?
Yeah, that's a great question. Wow. I'm not a parent, but I imagine so. And the thing is, too, also your kids can be a source of, as I have a sister who has my niece and nephew and my brother-in-law, and obviously they have to, you know, struggle as well with missing a brother. But yeah, they kind of, you know, look at their kids and say, you know, I want to make sure that I'm doing well so they can do well. So, you know, whatever external force helps you go forward with therapy, that's awesome. That's great.
Use it if you can.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I appreciate you taking time with us today. Is there anything else you wanted to let people know? I know you're going to be at the Walk for Awareness. It's Saturday, September the 15th, 9 a.m. till noon. You'll be speaking about 9:30. It's at the Huron County Nature Center on Loosemore Road. It's a beautiful place. You're going to love it. And then the walk will begin after you talk.
Yep. I guess for me the big thing is I'm a big fan of going outside. There is tons of research. Join me on the walk. Go outside. You know, enjoy the last days of summer that we have coming. It's actually a gorgeous day today. I'm actually outside in the woods hanging out. This is where you can usually find me. But, yeah, don't be afraid to come. I try to make my talk, you know, if we're talking about mental health, yes, but there's nothing wrong to saying mental health can be interesting. Mental health talks can be lighthearted. These are serious topics, but it doesn't mean we have to approach them with this grave, you know, dead seriousness. My brother was very goofy. I'm very goofy. Don't be afraid to be goofy. You know, be honest, be truthful, and take it with sincerity. But there's nothing wrong with being a little bit lighthearted. And my talk I give is very lighthearted, you know. I tell about the time I was biking through the desert, and turns out you need a lot of water in the desert, and I miscalculated that. And that was a dangerous situation, but, you know, it's what I call type 2 fun. It wasn't fun to do at the time, but it's fun to talk about. So I want people to ask me questions. I want them to be very, you know, honest, sincere. And if you're not comfortable asking a question in public, feel free to reach out to me individually at my website or, you know, email, which, do you mind if I throw it out there? Or?
Go right ahead.
Yeah, so you can contact me at rivardjoshua@gmail.com, all one word. And then my website is rivardrides.com. And I have my contact on there. And people feel free to reach out to me and contact me. And, you know, I'll be as honest as I can. If I don't know the answer, I'll find you a resource that will help you.
I would recommend the website first, because if you get the email wrong, you could be sending your most intimate private things to a stranger.
That's true. So rivardrides.com.
That would be the place to start, and I'm sure your email address is on there.
Yep, absolutely.
Thanks for being with us today, Joshua. I hope you enjoy your time in the Thumb. Again, that's coming up September the 15th, Saturday, 9 until noon, at the Huron County Nature Center on Loose Moore Road. Again,
yep,
thank you.
Thank you so much, Craig.
Okay.
Have a good one.
You too. Enjoy the woods.
Yeah, bye.
Bye-bye. Our guest today on the program has been Joshua Rivard. He will be the guest speaker, as again, for the Walk for Awareness, 7th annual, from the Huron County Suicide Prevention Coalition, Saturday, September the 15th. He'll be talking about his dealings with his brother's suicide and how to help yourself get through these things. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news. Do stick with us.